go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, welcome to the podcast. I am Ben Bolin.
And I'm Scott Benjamin.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Ben.
Have you seen, do you watch documentaries? Are you a documentary
fan? I do. Yes. Yeah.
There's a documentary that I saw recently on the old Netflix called Gas Hole.
Oh, boy. Really?
Get it? Get it?
Really? And is that what you thought you were running?
I wasn't sure what it was about. No, it's one of the, it's, I guess, sort of a conspiracy kind of piece of a documentary.
Sure.
But one thing that caught my eye about it is that it does have a lot of biodiesel advocates.
Okay.
In this documentary, mm-hmm. this hit piece, whatever
sure.
you want to call it.
Yeah, sure.
And biodiesel has always been incredibly interesting to me.
Are you a Willie Nelson fan?
Yes, I am a fan of the Red-Haired Stranger.
Got it.
You see? Yeah. Willie Nelson and I are probably on roughly the same page with biofuels.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you on your
It's always time. It's always Willie Nelson time.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So what we were thinking about today is covering a very interesting article that we had come out with on the website, right?
Yeah, we've got an article that's called – it's about biofuel, but it's called 10 Edible Biofuels.
Biodiesel is not one.
Yeah, that's right. No,
just for everybody.
No, it would not be one. Yeah. But, you know, it's an interesting article in that, you know, a lot of things are brought up here that, you know, I just never would have thought of as fuel, but, mm-hmm. I don't know. When I was looking at the list, there's 10 pretty good ones here.
Yeah.
Some of them are, you know, common and, you know, you'll expect them.
Right.
Others, I don't know. I just, it kind of escaped me that these could be used.
Well, let's go down the list and on the way, you know, let's, hit the things that are of interest to you or maybe the benefits or the consequences,
sure.
the pros and cons that we might have skipped over.
And you know, when we say edible, we're talking about, you know, the possibility that this is a food also, you know, that it's
right.
derived from a food or it there's a food component to this product.
Yeah. It's not like 10 delicious biofuels.
No, right? Not like you'll be pumping these into a container and then just, you know,
putting it in like cupcakes and sandwiches.
Yeah. Like, bringing a straw and just, you know, going crazy with it. But no, it's not like that. It's, you know, these are a lot of times you'll find these are used in cooking often, really.
Yes, sir.
You want to start us off? Or, hey, you know what, before we do this, I guess we should tell them what biofuels are just in case. Let's do a real quick explanation because – and I know some people are rolling their eyes. This is boring. But, you know, for those that don't know, biofuels are – well – we're talking about petroleum substitutes that are made from, you know, natural plant oils and things like that mm-hmm. you know, that are renewable sources of energy.
Organic matter.
Yeah, exactly. You can grow again. So, you know, there's different components to these. There's, you know, the gel factor, you know, that there's certain temperatures that, you know, these things mm-hmm. begin to gel and harden. You know, one example I think that was mentioned in this later is that, you know, like if you use bacon grease often
right,
when you're cooking
yeah.
or if you drain it into that cup – you'll notice that later it congeals. It turns into mm-hmm. A very thick, almost a waxy substance.
Yeah, almost like – it looks like this kind of paraffin thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's because I guess they need to separate it. They need to – it does need to be what's the term I'm looking for here? Distilled?
It needs to be – what is that word? Well, what we need to have a measure of control over the – viscosity.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what you need to do for a lot of these is you need to remove the glycerin.
Mm-hmm.
And the glycerin is what causes what I was just mentioning with the bacon fat.
The solidifying.
Exactly. That makes it maybe not so good for, you know, like low temperature mm-hmm. climates. Because, you know, if you put that can of grease into the refrigerator, it turns into that waxy substance much sooner than if you leave it out on the counter. So the cool temperature has a lot to do with that and a lot to do with a lot of these fuels. And some of them have problems with that and some of them don't.
And one other thing that is an issue and I believe a valid issue that a lot of people bring up when it comes to biofuels is the ethical quandary, the moral dilemma of using something that could feed people to power a vehicle. And the problem with some of this reasoning – and this is why I want to say this before we get to the list. The problem with that reasoning in some cases is that edible doesn't mean that it would be food consumed by humans otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It simply means it can go through your body without killing you.
Exactly.
And so maybe non-toxic.
Yeah, that's a different argument, in that let's just start with our number 10.
Sure. This is why we were seeing it.
Yeah, because, number 10 is corn. And a lot of people that, you know, are paying attention to news in the last few years will realize that, you know, of course there's the E85 gasoline blends that, you know, have come out, and
that's E for ethanol.
Yeah, E for ethanol. And you'll still find a lot of ethanol, you know, stations around, particularly the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one just this weekend. But it's rare to see one now, I think. And, you know, that kind of, it came on real strong, and then it kind of went away because the people started to, I don't know, there was a lot of backlash about this.
Right.
And
yeah,
a lot of the backlash was that, you know, they're using food to make fuel, and people felt that that was not right. But there's a different reality to that, right, Ben?
Right, because it is true that the United States, the ethanol made in the United States, is largely made from corn. The United States, of course, makes a massive amount of corn every year. A large amount of that corn is not intended for human consumption.
Mm-hmm.
It's used for other things, not just producing ethanol, but also, you know, to feed animals,
yeah,
or livestock.
And I think that's where a lot of people are confused, in that they thought that all of that was for human consumption, and why are we, you know, wasting this resource for, you know, for fuel for our cars that, you know, were there at the time, you know, everybody, well, even now, people are saying, you know, we need to get rid of these cars. We need to make them more fuel efficient. We need to find different ways. We can't use our food for this because there are people starving. And, you know, while it is used for livestock feed, what that does is that equates to a rise in the cost of meat. And dairy products, and, you know, there's a different trickle down effect to that than human starvation.
And that's, but still, that is one of the primary problems with corn as a source for ethanol, at least in this situation, because it is in high demand for a variety of industries. Now, Brazil has famously had some ethanol success using sugarcane. The United States, of course, has not had that because we don't have a sugarcane crop of that magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
And right now there's current research going, ongoing with the hopes of creating a more efficient, way of producing ethanol.
Yeah, because that's the second problem with this, is that it's actually more energy consuming to produce ethanol than it is to – than it actually produces itself. So it's one of the – it's a net loss, really, when you think about how much it takes to derive E85 out of corn, if you want to think about it that way, the end product from the initial product. By the time you get to the end product, you've actually used more energy to create E85 than E85 will provide.
That's a great point. One thing, let's add this, to up the stakes here in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
As we're going through, let's just cite, like, why something has not replaced gasoline at this point.
And popular attitudes towards the subject, because, you know, we're just speaking in general terms here. We're following the article.
Right.
And, you know, the number nine, if you want to go on.
Number nine is, soybeans.
Yeah. No. Soybeans.
I'm a huge soybean fan. Here's a personal anecdote, that you can laugh at me. Maybe it was around 2002, Scott, I looked at a container of soy sauce, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, what is in this magical junk instead of just salt?
Sure.
And I realized it's called soy sauce because the main ingredient is traditionally soybeans.
What do you know?
What
do you know?
What's that old PSA, the more you know, where the star goes up over?
Yeah, there's a little jingle that goes along with that.
Yeah, I have one of those moments.
Yeah.
But no, soybeans historically have been used for a great deal of things.
Yeah, exactly. Remember we talked about the plastic automobile panels that Ford was creating back in the 1940s?
Yeah.
1930s, I think. You know, there's a lot that's been going on with those. And in fact, you know, it's one of those things that it's hard to believe, but 20% of the soybean product, you know, the soybean itself contains oil.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
And that is one of the highest oil producing stocks, I guess, or one of the highest oil producing products that we have. And I found that amazing because you would think that they would be far more oil rich, I guess, in makeup for these items. But soybeans happen to be one that, you know, 20% of the oil as far as content, that's high.
Yeah.
I don't know why that staggered me so much. Now, I know there's plenty of other uses for soybeans, you know, what you can be made for plastics and they can be used for food, preservatives, all kinds of different things. But, you know, I don't know why the 20% thing really got me, but it just seemed like it was that, you know, a good candidate for biofuel, yes, but 20%, man, you would think that like corn would be a higher yielding product than that, or you would think that some of the others that we're going to talk about in a moment that actually have the word oil in the in the name of the thing, you know, you think that would be a higher content, but it's not.
Soybeans are typically used to produce biodiesel, and that is made from, of course, the oil of these tremendously oily beans. Now, as you said earlier, Scott, it is let's see, they remove the glycerin, and then the oil after that, it's all gravy. You could actually just pour that into a diesel tank.
Isn't that something?
It is. Now, why hasn't this replaced petroleum at this point? Well, that answer has a couple of factors behind it, but just to name a couple without going into too much detail, we can say that A, the cost is not there. The price point is still too high. And under that, we could also say that B, there is a lack of an established infrastructure, for the scale needed to replace gasoline.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We found the same thing with the 85 in that, you know, when, this was being brought around for, gasoline powered vehicles, that, there had to be a lot of changes made to vehicles in order to be able to sustain that fuel in tanks and fuel lines and, you know, what it would do to, the internals of an engine and the internals of fuel, the fuel system in general.
We're talking about the great flex fuel movement.
Yeah, exactly. So that, you know, I can understand why, you know, a mass switch over to something like this would be a little bit of trouble for a manufacturer.
Yeah. Well, let's go to a different thing then. As you said, something with oil in the name.
Yeah.
Number 8.
Palm oil, Ben. Palm oil.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, I know.
I'm feeling kind of tropical.
Yeah, I guess so. And here's the thing. You know, this is a where is this? This is from basically Southeast Asia, right? Southeast Asian crop primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the bad part about this, Ben. They're actually clearing rainforest in order to plant more palm oil producing plants or palms that produce palm oil.
Well, that's not very environmentally minded at all.
Well,
especially,
I don't think it is.
Yeah, especially when you're considering that these countries wherein the rainforests are being mowed down are places like Malaysia and Indonesia, which have some of the world's most biodiverse areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, everything that goes along with this, all the trappings of this, you know, there's potential for medicines or potential for new species discoveries.
There's,
you know, I don't mean to, you know, jump on this bandwagon and say, you know, how great we need to save the rainforest and do all this, but I mean, I'm saying that is it really so beneficial that we have palm oil that we clear rainforests in order to plant palm trees that can then produce these seeds? I don't think so.
There's something that makes it like a parable to me almost.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
It's tough. There's a high cost of production in this thing to begin with, but then, you know, you combine it with the environmental aspect and I just don't, I don't see, you know, when there's a cost benefit analysis that you're doing, I just don't know if there's the benefit side to.
Right. Well, presently.
Exactly.
And is there a short-term benefit that would possibly blind us to the long-term cost? Especially to, as you said, medicine and biodiversity. But there's another thing that is just as common as a dirty penny on the sidewalk, and that is used cooking oil.
Yeah, that's
number
right.
Number 7.
This is one that gained some legs just a couple of years ago, really.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people were joking about this all over the place, and it was really, really funny, you know, for a long time.
Have
in the
you
blogs,
ever smelled
you know?
One?
I have, yeah. I have, and I've seen the stickers or the decals on cars, you know, these old diesel Mercedes typically.
Right.
That say that, this car is running on old French fries or something like that.
Or vegetable oil or something.
And it does smell like French fries, Ben. It's just that, or fried chicken or something like that. We're talking about used cooking oil or frying oil that, you know, you have to pick up from, you know, behind
from the grease dump at a restaurant.
Exactly.
Or
you're going behind a you know, a fast food place and you're asking them for their refuse oil.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's it's kind of labor intensive. You got to strain this stuff out.
You really have to strain it.
Yeah, you have to be very, very careful about this when you do it. And you know, there's some conversions that you need to make to your vehicle and you have to I don't know. It seems like I don't know if this is the greatest option because it's an inconsistent fuel. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of depends on the quality of the oil that you get. And it's, you know, either from – it's either coming from different sources. It's from peanuts or it's from corn or
right.
it's from, you know, animal fats maybe.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like it's a reliable source of fuel or reliable enough for me to say that, yeah, if I had a diesel, I would convert over.
There have also been some people who have had run-ins with law enforcement over this.
No kidding.
Yeah, because you know, there is a tax issue if you're not paying
– oh.
Tax surcharge.
I see. And this is kind of a backdoor deal, right? Because you're
just getting – yeah, you're just going up to you know, insert fast food place here and essentially getting gas without paying taxes.
Oh, okay. All right. I can understand that.
But that's – so that's one of the disadvantages. And I think by now, by the time as we move toward number six, hopefully listeners can start seeing some of the same common problems – coming up, there's a cost. There's
a cost. Yeah,
that
I know.
There,
but we do have to recognize also that used cooking oil is an option, and it has been used on the road. It's truly a working, feasible option.
That is a great point. People do use it in Atlanta.
That's correct.
And
I know they do elsewhere too, because if they're doing it here, they're doing it elsewhere.
And for what it's worth, I would love to have a car that smelled like French fries.
What about peanuts?
On the outside?
What about peanuts? Would you like a car that smelled like peanuts?
Because, number six.
Yeah, peanut oil.
Yeah, okay. Now, of course, I would be okay with a car that smelled like peanuts.
Would you?
Because I love the circus. And that would remind me of, I don't know.
That's pretty good. Yeah, it's not bad. I'll give you that one. I don't think I would go for a car that smells like peanuts all the time because, I don't know, it seems like it would bother me.
Peanuts are not, you know, peanuts just don't get enough credit. They're such a versatile thing. I would go ahead and say that peanuts have potentially more uses than soybeans.
Just ask Dr. Carver.
Just ask Dr. George Washington Carver,
that's right.
Famous here in the States.
What, 300 uses for peanuts or something like that is what he founded, or he determined that there were. Amazing. It's an amazing product. It's really a legume. It's not a nut if you want to get technical about this,
right.
But, I don't think, Ben, that I could stand having a car that, you know, it's the same thing as the cooking oil really that we're talking about.
Mm.
I just don't think that I could stand having a car that smelled like peanut oil or French fries or fried chicken or whatever all the time. That would bother me.
What if it smelled like pizza?
Okay, I can deal with that. That's fine. My weak spot.
So, okay, but the downfall of peanuts is somewhat ironic because not only are peanuts tremendously useful and versatile and awesome for everything from plastics to
Reese's cups.
There we go. That's the primary one.
Yeah, it's very important.
Yeah. But this is also the reason why they have not replaced gasoline and are not a more widespread biofuel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just if you can use this peanut crop – for almost anything, then it's a lot tougher to neglect the medicinal values, the nutritional values,
sure.
and just make fuel with it.
Georgia grows a ton of peanuts. I mean, there's huge peanut fields here, and we even have there's a giant peanut on the side of the road as you travel south of town.
It's true.
Where they have a peanut festival, an annual peanut festival, and of course, who could forget Jimmy Carter and his peanuts? You know, he's a peanut farmer, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. It just seems like, you know, it's part of our heritage in this area, and I still, you know, I know that they're used for a lot of different things, but I think that, you know, primarily food sources are what people are using them for now, and cooking oils and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see them moving towards, I don't know, as a constant fuel for cars.
Too useful.
Yeah, that's
for
right.
Other things.
Yeah, that's right. There's just too many other purposes for peanuts, I think, right?
However, number five, cottonseed oil.
Ah, here's one. Cottonseed oil. Now, I would never have known this, but I guess right around, 1860 is what the article says.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cottonseed oil was common. It was a common cooking oil.
It was like the canola of the day or something.
In the United States. And the reason is because, you know, like per – how do they put it here? There's more oil available per acre from cotton than there is from corn or soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously here in the South, it made sense that, you know, cottonseed oil would become a major staple of, well – early American life.
Right, yeah. And, of course, we know that cotton is, again, one of these tremendously useful plants. These mm-hmm. are all super plants, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't necessarily order cottonseed oil in a restaurant. However, it is technically edible, mm-hmm. meaning it won't kill you. But that's the least of cottonseed oil's problems. There's a very, very challenging engineering obstacle for
this. That's right. For this one, this is where the gelling comes into factor, because it's not really good for cold temperatures. It tends to solidify at a temperature which is not really all that low. And I notice here that also the article mentions that, you know, cottonseed was used as animal feed at one point, but it, you know, they found out that too much of it led to digestive problems, nutritional problems with the livestock. So you don't want to have too much of this stuff. A little bit's good, you know, moderation's good, but you don't want to overdo it on the cottonseed. And that, I would assume, is the same for humans.
Yeah, and there's a question there too, sort of implied, which we haven't talked about, and that is, are there any health concerns from long-term exposure to any of these fuels? It sounds like a weird question because – you know, we're all sort of predispositioned to assume that because something comes from a plant or a renewable resource, it is automatically not just good for the environment, but also good for you. Those are not always,
true. And, you know, you know as well as I do that we've seen studies, about the long-term effects of, gasoline vapors on humans and, and diesel fuels on, you know, vapors on humans. Like people that work at the airport a lot, you know, they're around the fuel trucks, or people that work at gas stations their whole life. You know, they find that, you know, or even people that are just around that type of environment, racing pit crew people, you know, that you know, they're exposed to gasoline a lot. And, there's a lot of adverse effects to something like that, but it's long term. And
right.
Who's to say that, you know, cottonseed won't be one of those things, or palm oil, or E85, or, you know, any of these that we're mentioning today?
So that's – yeah, this brings us to our third point. One of our three larger points here is that we're not, of course, vilifying these materials. We're simply saying that another thing that they lack in comparison to petroleum is they have a lack of long-term studies. There are a lot of questions – that we don't know and we cannot answer in a short amount of time.
Here's one that has a long-term component to it. Number four. Safflower. All right. Now, safflower, imagine this, Ben, used in Egypt for mummification.
Recently or back when?
I would have to say back then. So, you know, we've got we got a product here that, you know, is good to mummify humans, or as well as be used as cooking oil.
I can see the ad line now. If it was good enough for the Pharaoh, it's good enough for your car.
Not bad, Ben.
My best work.
It's a healthy substitute for cooking oil. It has a low gel point, which is good. I mean, that means that, you know, it can go down to relatively low temperature before it gels. And here's the problem, though. Currently, it's pretty low in production, so it's not really heard of that much. There's not much safflower oil out there that, you know, people have, can get their hands on or have heard of or is grown in any kind of a manageable large way that they can then reap that for fuel.
Yeah, there's just not that much of it.
No, not right now.
However, there is quite a lot of number three. Linseed oil.
That's right. Yeah. And these, linseed oil is used often in woodworking. It's a wood treatment, you know, for, it preserves wood. It prevents wood from absorbing water, things like that. It stops wood rot. It prevents weathering, things like that. You'll put that on your deck, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Right? All right. So, linseed oil is not something that you would cook with. Linseed oil is something that's more of an industrial use, you know, something that's, already got a use that, you know, is serves you in one way. Like, you know, if you go to Home Depot and you pick this up and you want to put on a fresh coat of linseed oil on your fence or your deck or whatever, that's great.
Painters use it too.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
But you're not going to buy a quart of this stuff at, you know, the cost that it is now and dump it in your fuel tank. So there's a different process for getting large amounts of these oils out. And apart from, you know, these industrial uses, you can also use it apparently for lowering cholesterol. So there's in very small doses of this, you know, you're able to improve your heart health with linseed oil as well. And it can be used for clothing. There's the flax, which is used for linen.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that linseed oil flax was used for linen. I didn't know that there was anything really different from, you know, linen. I'm just not up on my textile.
On your flax?
Yeah, my flax, I guess.
You're slacking on your flax.
Yeah, but so in other words, the whole plant can be used. I mean, you can get oil from this and you can use the flax for, well, these linen products. And I didn't know that I don't know. I just assumed that it was a different type of cotton, I suppose.
And still we see that some of the same problems, the cost of this per unit, as you were talking about, and then the fact that it can be used for so many other things.
Yeah, because right now, like I said, a lot of these products or these crops are in relatively small not small farms necessarily because they're big farms, but they're not grown widely over large areas for this purpose.
Yeah, they're not at the scale they would need to be. I'll do number two so you can take number one, which is a bit of a surprise for most people, I think. Number two, sorghum. Not only is this a huge export for the United States, which means we have a lot of it that we can use domestically, it can also substitute for corn in some ethanol production processes. And it's widespread, well known. It's used in food of all types.
Did you say processes?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm just doing it, man.
Oh, okay. That's good.
I just went for it.
That's fine. No problem. Yeah. So, you know, what's strange about this is that it's interchangeable with ethanol. I guess I hadn't really thought about it this way, but sorghum could just as easily be used as, an E85 fuel as corn could be.
And unlike some things, it can be grown in, a number of climates.
Yeah. Okay. So that even another benefit to sorghum. That's why it's relatively high on our list here. It's used for, it's gluten free. So it's used for cookies and cakes and things like that, and sweetened beverages and things like that. But, the thing about it is like if it's got this much potential and it's that close to corn as far as, ethanol production, it makes you wonder why they couldn't combine the two, or does that just not work? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we'd have to dig a little deeper to find that. Mm-hmm. And I will start looking into that. But you, my friend, you have won.
Oh, boy.
And now it is time for the number one on our list of 10 edible biofuels.
Wah, wah, wah. Water.
That's right. Little H to the Izzo.
Yeah, I know. I know it. I felt kind of the same way when I saw the last page of this one as well. Okay, so water, we're talking about hydrogen, really, and when we get down to it, because we're talking about, the electricity or putting electricity through it and a process of electrolysis, which separates the elements, the components of water, the hydrogen, the oxygen, breaking down and using the hydrogen then. Okay.
Now, for listeners who aren't already aware of this, hydrogen is an awesome fuel if you can use it.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be.
It has a potential. There's much more fair.
Yeah, we've talked about this many times in the past about, some of the benefits of and some of the downsides of.
Yeah.
And, right now it just seems like it's not really happening.
Well, it barely weighs a thing, which makes it, preferable to gas in that regard. It's also very easily combustible.
Yeah, that's one thing. And, there's a lot of people that'll argue that, sure, it's combustible, but, it's easily expelled. It's quick to go away. Just look at the Hindenburg, how quickly that all went up.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really a great way to think about that, because a lot of people mention that in the same sentence. And I don't think that's fair to always bring up the Hindenburg when you're talking about fuel cell vehicles. Although I just did. I just fell into my own trap.
It happens.
I fell right into it.
It happens.
But the thing is, there's so much other going on with hydrogen fuel cell vehicles right now as far as hydrogen storage and how, there's a point where it just kind of goes away, Ben. Mm-hmm. And you can't really keep hydrogen in the tank for a very long period of time without it just evaporating. It just goes away. And I don't know if evaporation is the right way to say that even. I forget the terms that go along with this, but it does go away. It leaks out. And you have to keep it at a super, super cool temperature. And that in itself causes a lot of trouble. So it has great potential. But, when we say water as biofuel, we're really talking about hydrogen.
Yeah, don't be fooled. We don't care about the oxygen anymore.
Yeah, and we're really talking about fuel cell vehicles and everything that goes along with that. And I don't know. What do you think? Is that kind of a I don't know. I would almost rather see some of the other ones that are on this list as being number one.
Really? I think that hydrogen will quite possibly become more widespread. I don't know if it'll happen in the United States, but in countries that are moving away from gas and already on a widespread search for alternative energy, such as, you know, Japan with the recent nuclear disasters there, and Germany, which on the cusp of Japan's disaster decided to move away from nuclear power altogether. They have large-scale government support to try and find things that will free them from the necessity of importing oil, and they have a desire to create power domestically through new technologies, meaning that now more than ever before in history, there is a high likelihood that someone somewhere will either crack the engineering obstacles of hydrogen or live with them, which I think is ridiculous. But we could very well see hydrogen-powered cars sometime in our lifetime. Will they be widespread in the United States? I doubt it. I really doubt it.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Refining. That's the term, refining. Yeah. We early on in this podcast, I said – what did I say? Distilling.
Yes.
And I meant refining.
Fist bump.
Yeah, figured it out after all that. So I was staring through you for most of that comment, trying to just keep that word in my head.
I thought you were just getting angrier.
I feel better now. I do feel better.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's kind of man.
You beat the tip of the tongue problem.
Exactly. Now, hopefully that'll stave off a bunch of listener email.
Now, you guys, we'd like to hear what you think about these biofuels, especially if you drive a vehicle that runs on one of these.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about your used cooking oil car, your French fry smelling car.
Now, for what it's worth, I would love to have a vehicle that runs on this if I could get the price point down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, at least in the United States, are on the same page with me there. There are a lot of people who are actually probably somehow ideologically opposed to biofuels. But if the price is right, you know, as soon as it gets to $2 a gallon – then they'll be lining up for a kitted out car.
Sure. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that $2 a gallon swaying, swaying somebody into making a purchase of a car that, let's say, burns linseed oil.
Yeah.
Would that be strange?
Wouldn't it be? I wonder what your car would smell like.
I don't know.
Linen?
I don't know. I have to stop by the Home Depot and find out.
Yeah, that's true. Now we'll finally have an explanation for why we're up there huffing linseed oil.
that's a good point, Ben. You probably don't want to be doing that. Like, especially you don't want to pour it into a bag and then, you know, never mind.
That was you. You saw me there. We're gonna head out, you guys, but do let us know what you think and tell us about it on Facebook. Tell us about it on Twitter. And also let us know if there was another biofuel that you think should have been on this list.
Edible, because there's a ton of other biofuels that are out there that are not on the list, and we've got other articles about those biofuels as well.
Always the voice of reason, Scott. And that's a really good point. Also, let us know if you think one of these biofuels maybe didn't get a fair shake and it has more potential. If so, why? Tell us about it directly at our email.
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.